Hello and welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
Going to look at Mark Miller and Frank Quitely's Jupiter's Legacy, just in time for their big Netflix debut.
Who knew it was a comic?
But first, Ed, tell us about Red Room.
Here is a comic, a future Netflix show. Red Room, issue 1, is hitting the stands, or has hit the stands, May 2021. Murder on the Dark Web for Fun and Profit. Kayfabe crew, you guys made this comic a hit, man. Tons of copies are out there. Get your hands on issue 1. It's triple size compared to your regular jobber monthly comic. And it's going to be coming out on a monthly basis. It's cover for issue 2, cover for issue 3. You could read my comics ahead of time on my Patreon, patreon.com/edpiskor. I have 3 issues up there right now. And you could hit my link tree up to reserve copies yourself. Can't take for granted that you'll be able to find these in the wild, but if you do, pick any issue up because they're self-contained stories.
I am highlighting some of my books that are still available in imprint. I've had several books go out of print this year, so let me show you stuff that you can actually pick up at your comic shops or on Amazon or wherever you buy comics. This is The Plain Janes, my young adult graphic novel with Cecil Castellucci about a bunch of high school outcasts who make art around their little town. You can see it's a pretty substantial work, 500 pages of their art escapades, which get them in a lot of trouble with the local townsfolk and eventually lead them onto the straight and narrow path of a life of making art. But it's a bunch of outcast kids essentially raging against their boring suburban environment.
You said they grow up and become suburban housewives and make art while the clothes are washing?
I did not say that, Ed. Not at all. But it does go through their entire high school career. So you see them show up and start doing this art on the side. And by the time they graduate, they're kind of having showdowns with the local law enforcement. Let's see if we get one of those panels before we shut it down. You can see her getting ready to square off with the police. And pretty soon her friends in the art community and high school come out to join her. So I shouldn't give away that spoiler ending. But Plain Jane's available now wherever you buy comics, and pick that one up. But we are here to talk about Mark Miller and Frank Quitely's Jupiter's Legacy. I think of Mark Miller and Miller World as high concept. You know, most of this stuff can be pitched in a sentence, and it's something that's very easy to understand, and Jupiter's Legacy is probably the toughest one for me to put into a one-sentence summary. But it is a superhero comic. The reason that I originally started picking these up is Frank Quitely. I think he's one of the best superhero artists working, and always excited whenever I get to look at new Frank Quitely work. And so the story in Jupiter's Legacy is about a family across generations. This family gets superpowers in the 1930s, post-depression, post-Great Depression. They pick up these superhero powers, and then they use those to try to make the world a better place. Pretty self-explanatory, especially post-World War II. Think of the Greatest Generation. That's kind of how the superheroes are, the first generation of these superheroes are. We cut between that origin and current day, which in this case is 2013. And the next generation of these superheroes, this is the main character's daughter. It's a very different world. They are the celebrities you would expect superheroes to be. This is the other main kind of character. It's the son. So you have a son and a daughter who are at odds with the parents in a lot of ways and definitely not living up to that Greatest Generation's expectations of them. They're kind of swimming in that murky young adult, not sure what to do with their lives stage, while mom and dad are out there saving the world and fighting supervillains. There is a line of, I'd say, the cliches and tropes of superhero comics that you're going to see these characters brush up against. They maintain secret identities because, in their words, it keeps them grounded. But there are some interesting twists on that, of course. This is a really cool panel for my money. This one character, this is the brother of the main superhero character. Main character is Utopian, and this is his brother who does a lot of mental things. And so he'll get whoever they're fighting, he'll get into their mind and take them to other places. And what's cool here is you get to see some of like Frank Quitely's pencils, some of the behind the scenes stuff. And also one of the things I think Quitely is great at is he's able to draw this stuff in ways that other superhero artists just don't conceptualize. You know, it's kind of showing us something we've seen for 60, 70 years from a fresh new perspective. And you really get to see it whenever you see like how do we have this guy's mental landscape? And the story here is the uncle character has rebuilt this entire setting from his, like, a childhood vacation. And he talks about that. But while he has this villain here, the superheroes are just, they're breaking his spine. Like, literally, that's what's happening in this sequence. Spine being broken. It's kind of cool because we're going to see that character use it again on the Utopian and his wife later.
Right.
And so knowing how it works is really interesting. The other part that is cool to me, we look at a lot of old comics, and, you know, if you're watching this and you're thinking, 2013, this is an old comic, it isn't. This is when Image starts to rebuild themselves, you know, whenever they switch over and get some different editors. Eric, I don't know if Eric Larson's the publisher at this point.
Or Eric Stevenson.
Yeah, Eric Stevenson's here. So I always associate Eric Larson takes over as publisher at one point and kind of turns Image around in a lot of ways. And then Eric Stevenson takes over, and that's where we're at here. And Image is really interesting for many years as, like, this comic book publisher. This is the height of that time period for me. This is when I start thinking about doing Street Angel at Image and picking this stuff up. And the reason I'm talking this way, look at these staples. They're so different than the staples that we see in most comic books. This is a totally different, well, not totally different, but a very different production model. These are self-covers. You know, the staples are different. They're rounded instead of flat. There's some changes to the comic book that happen around this time period. And that's something that stood out to me whenever I first encountered it. It's something that stood out to me when I was rereading this week. Kind of weird.
Yeah. But the self-cover has always been tough for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't love it. There's your other, you know, like, this is your married couple of the main matriarch and patriarch of this superhero world. There's maybe 100 of these superhero characters. I'm not positive, but I think they get activated possibly through, like, sexual activity with somebody who has the superpowers. At least that's my reading of some of the stuff with this new generation.
Like, superpowers are sexually transmitted?
They never explicitly say that, but that was my interpretation, because a couple of girls approach the sun and they're like, they want to be in the club.
Dig.
So that was the way I was reading that, but I could be wrong in it. But the daughter has all kinds of her own problems. She's an addict. And so what we see here is she's doing these drugs that came from some alien, you know, they procured from some alien source. So this is that superhero world of, like, aliens and supervillains and the things you, again, expect in the tropes of superhero storytelling. They're here. Maybe the addiction and the depiction of that is a little bit different. But I also find this stuff interesting. The Miller World machine.
Yeah, man. Doing his Stan Lee gimmicks. Like, look at that dapper ass.
It's real fun. And if you look close, this is his transition away from Marvel. So Secret Service, his Dave Gibbons book, is published by Marvel at this time.
Oh,
as
that's
he's
cool.
Moving into, you know, I think...
And that's Kingsman, right?
Yes, yeah. Kingsman. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So high-profile book. And I think he did, you know, like, Kick-Ass started under Marvel. It's their, like, icon line. So he has been very deliberate, I think, in how he's kind of moved through the comics sphere and moving to something like Image, where he really maintains all of this control. I think that was real conscious.
This is a cool thing.
This is great, and especially because whenever I see these, I have to look, like, what are the Pennsylvania stores? Arkham Gift Shop and Dunkin' Comics.
That's awesome.
Within 5 miles of my house, both of these shops. So, but I do like this, you know, like give some shine to comic book shops.
Yeah, give some incentive for other shops to get on the ball and get in there.
It's really interesting the way Mark Miller has sold his comics and his characters and things.
The people who kind of become somebody in this game, you have to do more. It's not meritocracy per se. I'm not saying that these are bad comics or anything, but, like, you have to do a little extra to get the word out, man. It is a fiction to imagine that the universe is just going to find you.
No doubt. I always love this, too, whenever we get to see some of Quitely's pencils.
Yes.
I'm very impressed with his art.
I think
it's different than most of the approach of the superhero comics I read
past. Quitely was working on one of the sequel books or something like this, I think, whenever he was doing that documentary. So you get to see some pencils and some thumbnail. Like, the thumbnails are amazing, man, because he'll get his script from Miller, print it up however that would work, and the margins are just littered with beautiful little drawings everywhere.
Yeah, I love that stuff. So this is the son trying to, drunk off of his ass and, you know, trying to be, like, the good superhero son. So he's transporting this boat because there's no supervillain attack happening anywhere. So something he could do proactive, you know, cut some days off the transportation. But
a little
of course,
Suez Canal gimmick right here.
Exactly. It really is.
Yeah, it is.
It's good. It's good timing for us that has happened recently because he fumbles it. And of course, Dad has to show up.
And now I can't get oat milk.
It establishes rifts between father and son, and we learn that the uncle is also has some plans that the father doesn't approve of. Back to the daughter, after her OD shows up in the hospital, turns out she's pregnant, Ed.
Of course.
Didn't know about it, but that is just complicating her life even further, and you see effects of just how powerful these characters are. They never really define their superpowers, but like they fly to the moon. Whenever she gets upset and yells, it just destroys the physical setting that she's in.
Just feels like Tetsuo Akira type shit when you have the hospital setting and, you know, psychological superpowers happening.
Yeah.
She needs to grow some eyebrows, man. That's
it is an interesting look.
That's definitely something she needs to work on.
This is the father of the daughter of the superhero's unborn child. And as we learn about him, he's not a superhero per se, but his father was the greatest supervillain. And so he has some pluses. And one of them is this magic wand tool that his father had built him that allows him to transport both himself or someone else. These guys show up and say that he owes them money. He transports one into the depths where they are sharks that just eat the guy up.
A lot of widescreen here.
Oh yeah, all widescreen. Yeah, all widescreen. But this is his the girl who's pregnant shows up with her superpowers, just kind of appears on the scene. They have this conversation. There's your penciled image.
Yeah,
his art is real interesting because if you read like All-Star Superman, there's a digital inking credit, but he's one of these guys, like I think this is reproduced from his pencils with just, you know, like increasing the contrast so you get kind of a sharpish line.
He is.
And that evolves. Like, you can see that evolution through his work.
For sure. He's got a very painstaking line. When we see that altered reality thing where we see blue line pencil and stuff, he's putting down that non-photo repro blue so that he can just give you the tightest, you know, 0.5 millimeter technical pencil ink, pencil lines.
I'll be honest, like, reading this, I was trying to figure out, he might be drawing this digitally for all I know. You know, at some point he may have made that transition. Because I remember that video and there is some digital imagery on there.
Yeah, I don't remember that part.
So I really can't tell exactly how he's making this. But nonetheless, what we just saw is the uncle get embarrassed and dressed down by the dad because he's trying to pitch some economic reforms to the White House. And the dad's like, we don't get involved with that. That's publicly elected officials. You trust them to do their job. And one of the backdrops of this is all the economic crisis that's going on, the wealth disparity, all of these different things. And he believes, like, we should be trying to apply our superpowers to make the world better in that way instead of just fighting, like, people in colorful costumes. More of the Mark Miller selling stuff. And, oh, not yet. He expands his list at some point. But you see, again, the Miller World branding. So smart.
Yeah,
he's one of the
smart
few guys that have done this, I think, successfully.
It's a diversification of portfolio to some extent. I guess a lot of this stuff is image, but you know, there was the Marvel bit, and that's something that you learn from guys like Matt Wagner, who had Mage and Grendel at one publisher, and when that publisher went away, you know, he was able to do things with Mage, but Grendel took years to get ironed out.
And in some cases, that same publisher was Bill Willingham's Elementals.
Yeah.
That never got ironed out.
No, it did not, man. Get a lawyer.
Part of the reason that you go to an image, you know, if you're Mark Miller and can go anywhere, it's like, at least here, you feel like you maintain all of that control. I think this is one of those images that might show up in that documentary on Frank Quitely.
Sick.
So, he goes, the pronouns, pal.
Yeah.
The father of the unborn child shows up with his mother of the unborn child's father, Utopian, and his secret identity. You get a little bit of their philosophy on superheroes. Why do you have a secret identity at this point? Keeps you grounded. It's kind of funny. You also see the machinations behind the scene of like this manipulative uncle whose powers are really intelligence. You know, so it's this kind of contrast between him and Utopian, who has more traditional superpowers of strength. But Utopian's basically telling this guy, your dad was, you're a drug dealer, your dad was a supervillain, get out of my daughter's life, we'll take care of the child. That's what we're seeing there. And, you know, diplomatically, they're not fighting about it, but he's kind of telling, that's the reason for this meeting. And in the middle of it, he's like, oh my God, stay here. And you get that great Clark Kent-esque superhero moment of, it's such an emergency, he flies through the roof, and you see the glasses and costume left behind.
It's such a fascinating storytelling approach, because that's right there, that's a big moment.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, one-eighth of the page. We have the constant four-tier structure that's kind of allowing for no real hyperbole. Like, right. This is a hyperbolic moment, but that's squeezed into an eight-panel grid.
Yeah, it's really an interesting choice, because if you look close at the drawing, it's a cool drawing.
Totally.
The idea of, like, flying through the ceiling, and of course, quietly able to draw whatever you want really well, that would be a cool big panel. You know, even if it was a half splash or something, like, kind of neat.
It does make me wonder if, like, towards the end, are we saving up for some very dynamic splash pages?
Well, we will see. But not to get ahead of ourselves, daughter goes back to mom's house. Mom's really nice to her. Kind of an interesting setup, because what's going to happen here, what is happening here, is Uncle has orchestrated a plan to take down Mom and Dad because he wants the superheroes to run differently. And so that's what is happening here. And after seeing a very nice panel of the mom, you know, welcoming the daughter home and really, you know, being part of the family, she also is attacked. Some of the attack panels are really great. You know, you mentioned Akira. I always think of Mobius when I think of Quietly, and mostly due to kind of the figures and the way he defines space. Jeff Darrow comes to mind with some of this stuff where you see shards of glass breaking out of windows very small.
This is another Akira piece, though. When Tetsuo gets thrust into the upper atmosphere, and he's shot against the dark side of the moon. And by the way, like, if you watch that documentary with Quietly, you know, he uses Akira phone books for pillows in his studio in between pages, so he's down for
sure. Yeah, no doubt about it. Look how dynamic this is for just a running pose. Everything is kind of punched up. You know, his stuff is sort of sparse, not a lot happening in this panel, but painstakingly drawn, you know, like figured out.
The sketches you
see in those layouts, you know, that's where all the work is on this stuff, or at least a lot of the work.
Yeah.
So mom comes to daughter's rescue and is surrounded by villains. Dad flies off because there's something moon-sized coming at the Earth, you know, a gigantic asteroid that's coming at the Earth and really taxing his superpowers. He's calling forth other superheroes to help him. They don't show up. So when he arrives back on Earth, he is in a very weakened state whenever all the other superheroes come to execute this plan to take over.
It's wild seeing these characters in you know, real life actors with costumes and stuff, because they abide by them and shit.
I have no idea how this is what you adapt.
Yeah.
Because it's so big. Like, it's for all of, you know, you describe this as being down to earth, or the way it's depicted as being kind of like nothing is overemphasized. It's still all superhero action.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious to see like what that looks like. I don't watch superhero movies for the most part, so I don't really know where those are at, but it seems challenging. And a little bit more of Quietly's stuff here, because why? Mom's going into that mental nightmare scape while they execute her. And whenever we cut back, that's what it looks like.
There we go, man. You gotta save the splash for moments that matter.
Left-hand page, too.
Yes, you gotta do it on the page turn, man. Listen, we're storytellers here, and if it's an image book, you control the page turn. You're not gonna have to worry about a Got Milk ad screwing up your flow.
Yeah. Man, it's so brutal, too, because she is a very sympathetic character throughout.
That piece also, by the way, that's very, like, Kurosawa.
So, next up is the daughter. You know, like, he's taking care of all these loose threads, but the boyfriend shows up with his device that allows them to teleport, and off they go. And it's really neat, because they're racing around the globe, and the superheroes are close behind them. It's not one jump that gets them free. As they jump, many of these superheroes with their own teleportation, flight, super speed, they're keeping up for a while. Pretty cool whenever she stops a car that's chasing them. Look at this dude flying through the windshield.
Love it.
Because we're going to see the aftermath. He is tied in a knot on the ground. And she's like, is he okay? He's like, he's fine. They're still coming. We got to keep going.
Dude, that's just like when we were coming back from Heroes Con and you ran over a turtle and you were like, I think that turtle could still be alive. And I said, oh, yeah, sure, Jimmy.
You're right. That's exactly right, Ed.
Yeah, I think that turtle's alive still, as it was hop, like,
yeah, I like to imagine him reminding her of this guy 8 years later. No, that dude was fine. The guy who isn't fine, Utopian, is about to pay his price now. And the whole key was getting the sun, because you need somebody powerful enough to take this Superman-esque patriarch down. So in his weakened state, we get to see the sun come in and deliver the death blow. It's kind of like the Ghost Rider's stare. And that's the aftermath of that death stare.
I love it.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good. And, you know, quietly kind of taking advantage. Like, you see all the superheroes peel back away because of superhero, you know, ultimate force being used in the middle. You don't want to stand too close. But the daughter did escape. Oh, and I should show off our Pennsylvania. Oh, it still hasn't expanded. Keep going. Brian Hitch variant cover. Ed, you're selling variant covers. That's part of the direct market game these days.
It's the direct market that we've inherited.
Yes, and you can see that inheritance from 7-8 years ago. Just part of the way that goes. And this is the origin of where these superpowers came from, this island that the Utopian envisioned and then tracked down.
Yeah,
there's an alien connection to that. He refers to it as a university. Like, once they start actually scaling up the island, there are these mechanically created pieces. You know, I was going to say man-made, but they're not man-made, but they're not natural either.
Right.
So it's almost a gift from these gods. And then cut back to Australia 2022. Also funny, whenever our future dates are
so
very close to where we are. And we see, you know, this is your unborn child is now born. And guess what? Of course, he has superpowers. He's part of the family, part of the lineage. They're living off the grid. The other thing that happens here as we jump ahead 9 years into the future is we get to see what Utopian's brother plans, how those have panned out. Not well. It has not worked. He has not created the utopian future that he sought to create. And now at this point, if you're not part of those superheroes, they're almost like the authority or something. You know, they're kind of in control. And outside of the U.S., there are a handful of supervillains that live off the grid and try to stay off the radar of these superheroes. This you know, their international police force of superheroes that track down any superpowers that show up. So, of course, the kid can't use his superpowers for fear of alerting the superheroes, who are kind of still looking for them.
This is the page that he was working on the documentary.
Yeah, you definitely, I think, see this panel.
Yeah, he's working this piece out right there.
Of course, the kid is like a little Superman because they tell him, you know, good and evil stories, bedtime stories. So whenever some crisis shows up, he runs off to solve that crisis.
Good coloring on that stuff, man. You got the white, got the red, man, with the cool background colors.
Shout out to the colorist Peter Doherty, who also does lettering. So he's kind of like the production guy, you know, after Mark Miller and Frank Quitely. Peter Doherty gets he gets 3 credits. I forget what the third one is, but it's rare to see letterer and colorist together.
It is. Cool special effects with the drawing.
Yeah. I mean, anything he draws. We always point out cartoonists doing rain. Really exceptional.
Looks like the Eisner School.
And it's the reason for this is he's trying to put out a chemical fire. So he creates basically a giant thunderstorm. But that slowly does draw attention to you know, to these superheroes. Here we're getting to see just how ineffective their plans were to improve the world. Doesn't work at all. And this guy is like the Inglourious Bastard, the guy who hunts down the Jews in Inglourious Bastards. He hunts down the superheroes. And so that's what we're going to see. A lot happens in issue 5, you know, like we're basically at the end here, and it's kind of all been set up in a lot of ways. So Pennsylvania has expanded now to Pittsburgh Comics, Collins store, really good store. My first artist edition was bought at Pittsburgh Comics, Wally Wood, which I can't believe we haven't showed that yet on the channel, and Phantom of the Attic in Monroeville.
It's so weird, like these are all off-brand stores to me. You know,
it is random. I have no idea how he figured out which stores to do. Usually Philadelphia gets coverage when I see Pennsylvania Comic Store listed, but in this case, you know, 4 local stores. So good job, Mark.
So weird, man.
And then finally, we have our superhero hunter, and you can only imagine that he set his sights on the superhero kid who is in Melbourne. So it's a little bit of misdirection, because the first person he's tracking down there is not our child hero, but rather this woman in an office. And this is really reminds me again of Inglourious Basterds. He's having a conversation with her. She has answers for every question he has. Pretty good, except his last question is, he has manipulated the atmosphere and everybody in this office has passed out in the course of this conversation except for her. Why is that? She's a super, super villain. Although we don't see her do anything dastardly, it's just trying to stay away from these superheroes, and her power is she can transform into a giant.
A little Mark Miller fetish gimmicks here.
It is, but also it fits Frank Quitely's ability to draw really well, especially with scale and space, so you get to see the giant trying to flee
look
next
the,
to normal-sized people.
Bubblegum foot binders.
They catch her very quickly, just to show his effectiveness, I suppose. And at the same time, he's very close now to our refugee family.
This is such a hard pose mm-hmm. to draw.
Flying is really hard to draw well.
And this is like a very naturalistic body. Like there's the shorthand that you would see in Superman comics or something, but this is not that. That is a fully realized like 3D image. Like Frank Quitely like understands the forms that are going into that drawing right there.
Yeah, it's really great. It's the foreshortening is used really well for that gravity-defying kind of feeling.
Beautiful moon. I'd love to see that in black and white.
Yeah, it's a great moon. So he gets busted by his mom because he's been creating this device on the moon to like find other superheroes to send signals out, stuff like that.
Look at Charlize Theron and and Monster.
Yeah. And she's like, you just can't do this. Like you're gonna get yourself killed. Essentially, is the warning. So she's trying to drive home to him that you know, these guys already killed her mom and dad, and you know she can't bear the thought of them doing that to him. Unfortunately, he appears in the reflection of a window of a building, and this guy realizes it's another superhero while I'm here.
Yeah, bravo for adventure himself.
They do a lot of this secret identity stuff where characters, you know, she dips into the bathroom to go to the moon to track down her son, and when she comes back, a guy's like, how long's your toilet break? There's a few of those. Happens with his schoolmates, the little kid's schoolmates, and they set him up. A couple of his classmates recognize that when something goes wrong, he disappears for a couple minutes, and something is wrong, and so that's what alerts him, and it's a trap, unfortunately, but that's what happens here. Even like knocking the door off of the bus, you get that moment of just speed, the papers
totally.
In the air. This is the same principle as wheels of the car off the ground.
Absolutely.
Quitely's really smart with all of this.
He really is, and I encourage everybody to check out that documentary because you see the level of thought that he's bringing to the
That's
thing.
What it is. It's thoughtfulness.
He's not an extension of, you know, the writer, just drawing exactly what's on the printed page, on the manuscript.
It's why you see these writers, I feel like they fight to get him on their books.
Sure.
You know, you see him in Grant Morrison's another guy who I think likes to work with Quitely. Probably anybody likes to work with Quitely, but it feels like they kind of fight for his time. And the big showdown now, whenever you have your... It's funny to call this guy the superhero, but the superheroes, of course, have become this super fascistic force on this planet. And then this is the moment. Once the sun has been exposed, now it's all on. So she's back. We're having the fight between the hunter and his kind of soldiers, not necessarily super powered, but his soldiers coming out, and this is it. This is what they've been, you know, fearing and preparing for. Always fun whenever you get to see some of the violence. That's a great moment of post-impact, and you get both the aftermath of him bouncing off and the fracturing of the concrete wall behind him from
Dude,
impact.
That's another Otomo piece, man. That's Domu right there.
Awesome. And then husband shows up, and that's the story, you know, like they are back on the run after sending a pretty strong message to the people following them. And their plan, now that they've hit the road, is let's get all the supervillains together, and like, we got to fight now. We've been exposed. To protect their son, they have no choice. And so that's the plan that they come up with here at the end. End of book one. I think there's three volumes of this that are available. I can't remember if I've read more than any of the other volumes or not, to be honest. It's been years. Think of the number of comics we read between 2013 and now.
I don't think they're Frank Quitely.
I think he may have done one, and I can't remember. Somebody else definitely drew one of them. Wilford.
Torres.
Torres. Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah. So I thought this was interesting, Ed, is, you know, cosplay fans. Mm-hmm. So this is not different than what you see, like New Talent Showcase. This is Image used to do this in like Generation One, where they would be running fan art, The cosplay, I think, is a little bit later than the Image Generation 1, but you do see this stuff. It's just really smart, like fan service on Mark Miller's part, you know? Go sell my brand, people. Dress up as my characters at conventions, you know? Send in pictures of that. Draw our characters. Share those around.
At a certain point, he was even putting the call out to, like, fresh talent to draw some future books, and he wasn't... You know, there's a lot of scumbags out there, man, who are... very excited to exploit a young eager beaver artist type character, but he was very, very transparent about, like, this is what you should be expecting to make from me, like, this is the offer, before he chose anybody. So it was all kind of upfront and very cool. And, you know, we have very few Miller stories. We said it on the shoot interview, hooked up with a guy who Miller said, you know, I want to make you a millionaire, and he did. So quite possibly took some people off the streets and, you know, hooked them up with life-changing comics.
We talk all the time about, like, the Teenage Mutant Ninja guys as being these saints of indie comics and creator ownership and stuff. Miller's another example. You know, like, he walked away from a very lucrative Marvel deal to make his own characters and comics and collaboratively with these different artists, and made everybody a ton of money on that stuff. So it's a... beyond the comics that he makes, it's a story worth indie creators looking into.
Sure.
And seeing some of the very smart choices he made along the way. Pretty cool story outside of the comics, but makes me curious how you turn this into a television show. I don't know, man, but certainly an interesting comic, and quietly for me is the superhero in Jupiter's Legacy.
I'm good to go if you are, Jimmy.
Me too.
K-Fabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. What's out there, man?
You can join me on patreon.com/JimRugg, where you can see how I make my comics. You can also pick up some of my hard-to-find and out-of-print mini-comics and zines on patreon.com/JimRugg.
There's subtlety in that art. Like, look, just like a little piece of underpants, like, showing right there, man. Just kind of roots it in.
Thoughtfulness.
Red Room Issue 1 is coming out May 2021, or it is out, depending on when you're watching this video. It's a monthly comic, Murder on the Dark Web for Fun and Profit. That first issue is going to be hard to get, man, because the demand is so high. Triple size first issue. You could read all the comics at my Patreon, patreon.com/EdPiskor. $3 gets you the archive, and you could pre-order the comics at the Fantagraphics website at my link tree in the description below.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below this video to keep up with everything we have coming up. And what a busy year, Ed.
That's goddamn right.
You can find Cartoonist Kayfabe t-shirts and merchandise at the links below this video.
Jimmy, give them one less set of margin orders, man. We're going to be on our way.
Read more comics.